We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
Happy Hump Day, Chiefs Kingdom. Did you know that Travis Kelce needs just 82 yards to hit 10,000 total receiving yards for his career? And if he does it this Sunday against the Bengals, he'll have done it 38 games faster than any other tight end in the history of the NFL. And even more than that, another Patrick Mahomes stat for you, because we don't ever get tired of these. If Patrick Mahomes throws for at least 320 yards on Sunday against the Bengals, he'll be the first quarterback in NFL history to have at least 320 yards passing in seven straight games. Thought this was supposed to be a down year for Patrick Mahomes. Nope. Anybody paying attention, anybody who's really watched him, knew that probably wasn't going to be the case. Now, this is KCSN Update, our daily Chiefs show and podcast here at KC Sports Network. I'm BJ Kissel, former Chiefs insider and sideline reporter. Now, I'm working with some phenomenal content creators trying to build a new outlet for Kansas City sports fans. So we appreciate you for hanging out with us today and spending a little time with us. It's Wednesday, so we'll soon be joined by the king of NFL YouTube content, Brett Coleman. But before we bring on Brett, here's a quick word from the presenting sponsor of KCSN Update, our friends over at DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is my go-to when betting on the NFL this holiday season. They have the best app to find the plays you're looking for. I personally love the anytime scores, talk about it all the time. Always feel like you got a shot and you go across the NFL. Always a lot of fun. Now, and right now, new customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. And check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, player props, point totals, and more. The more legs you add, the bigger the boost, the bigger your shot to win big. This Sunday, Chiefs 2.5-point favorites on the road against the Bengals with an over-under of 52 points. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code KCSN. Place a $5 bet on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code KCSN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. All right, now let's welcome on Brett Coleman, the king of NFL YouTube content to the show. Brett, before we get started, what was your favorite moment from Chiefs-Rams last Sunday?
That early Travis Kelce catch and run. Because it was one of those where you almost kind of expect it at this point, but I savor it every time we get a big play from Kelce because he's already still the top of his game, but he's also what, like 33, 34, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I have now gotten to the point in Travis Kelce's career where I'm trying to savor it while we still got it. And yeah. I don't know if he's got 3, 4, 5 years left. I'm going to try to enjoy these years while I can, because every time he does that, he does stuff that most tight ends in NFL history have not done. Physically speaking, every time he makes a play like that, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to sit back and enjoy that because that's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know how much longer we're going to get that. I love it.
the nuance with his route running at the top and all those things that he does that you really have to pay attention to understand how can a 33-year-old tight end get so open across the middle of the field with a cornerback and let alone Jalen Ramsey, who might not be, let's be careful about how I say this, might not be the Jalen Ramsey that we're used to, but it's still a very good player in this league that was getting, you know, burnt a little bit by a 33-year-old tight end across the middle who's running away from him, creating all that separation. Special. I said off the top of the show, Kelce, 82 yards on Sunday. He'll be the fastest tight end in NFL history to 10,000 yards by 38 games. Like, the numbers are silly. And if he wasn't so damn good at podcasting and media and pretty much whatever else he wants to do, I would hope he would play till he's like 40. I don't know if that's going to be the case.
He's so durable too. Like, he had the microfracture his rookie year, but I don't think he's missed a game since then in like almost 10 years.
Not a lot, but that dude, he takes a beating. Like, he puts himself through it. And I'm at the point now where, you know, whenever he catches, if he just wants to turn around and like, just jump on the ground, just kind of fall down. Like, I'm completely cool with it. Like, I know the yards after catch, all that's great, but he can run a Y stick till he's like 47 years old. Like, he's going to get open. He's going to do the little shimmy at the top of his route. Like, he'll be fine.
Do you think he's going to go after Gonzo's record, or do you think, cause he could play that long if he wanted to.
If he wanted to, but it probably depends how many Super Bowls. I mean, how his body's feeling in the offseason and when he's done, just because, like I said, these guys put a lot. I mean, you know, like, they put so much on the line for it that I don't know what it's going to take for him to do it, because he has so many different things that he'll be able to do outside of football. And he'll be able to make more money when he's done playing football than he's doing playing football. Yeah. So then it's how much does he still want from the game? How much does he have that desire? And it's not even the games. Everybody wants to go play on Sunday. It's the OTAs, it's the training camps, it's all that kind of stuff. But I think it helps that he and Mahomes are boys and go win a bunch of Super Bowls together, and hopefully that's enough. But either way, to your point, let's just appreciate it while we've got it, because it's unique, it's different. You have arguably, and I know you hate these big statements, but it's the greatest start to a quarterback in NFL history. That is without question, based on all the numbers and we've been talking about all year. Most wins through the first 75 games of his career, most passing yards through the first 75 games, most touchdowns through the first 75 games. It's different. And then with Travis Kelce, arguably the greatest tight end, I mean, you're watching two of the best, if not two of the best, at their respective positions in NFL history in their primes at the same time. Let's freaking enjoy it.
Yeah. And you wonder why they haven't lost a game in November or December in three calendar years. Oh, well, that probably helps.
Yeah. They're good at what they do, right? And you know who else is good at what they do is you. So let's talk a little Chiefs Bengals coming up this Sunday. It's the game that I had scheduled, circled, you know, when the schedule came out, because they're the ones who ended the season for the Chiefs. They're the ones who had their number per se, and very frustrating second half. We've talked about this before. We were in Vegas for the East-West Shrine Bowl. It was sandwiched right in there with that game, and it just kind of ruined the next few days there out in Vegas. As the Chiefs fans are getting ready to watch this game, when you're looking at the Bengals offense, started off kind of slow. Seems like they've hit their stride. They should be getting Joe Mixon and Ja'Marr Chase back. I know it's going to be reported. There's no way Ja'Marr Chase is not playing in this game. With zero insider information, just don't see that being the case. What do Chiefs fans need to know about this year's version of the Bengals offense and what they like to do and what Chiefs fans and the Chiefs should be prepared for?
It's funny because it's not that dissimilar from the Chiefs in the sense that, like, their run pass ratios are like right next to each other. They're both probably around 34 to 38% run, you know, bottom quartile of the league. The Chiefs are like bottom four in the league in terms of run pass ratio. And so the Bengals, very similar, you know, they try to augment the run game with the quick pass game, just like Casey likes to do. Mm-hmm. I do think that when Jamar's on the field, obviously, they're a much more explosive team down the field, because I think that when you have Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, you can call 989, which is literally two go routes and then a middle read route, which is typically a post. You know, you can call that kind of stuff and just take shots and trust your guys to win. Casey's, they don't necessarily have the same personnel for that they used to. And so they're a little bit more explosive down the field, where I think that KC is better with yards after catch. So kind of two differing styles, two different ways to get yards. I would say this is, assuming Jamar is playing, this is probably going to be the toughest test for this young secondary that the Chiefs will have all year, because you have two guys that even when they're covered, they're not covered. And they will be tested on jump balls over and over and over again and asked to go win. Whether they do that, I think we'll determine who wins this game, because if you're giving up 30-yard chunks and 40-yard chunks to Jamar and T on something as simple as a one-on-one down the boundary, it's going to be hard to win. So I think that like that is the point for this game, is stop the jump ball, force them to get their chunks in other ways, you know, force them to, you know, if we're doing a 3-by-1, which they love 3-by-1s, if you take away that isolated back shoulder ball on the ISO side, you force them to have to get their chunks against like the 3-over-4 on the trip side, it's going to be harder for them to make hay. So that's key there, is really having the corner, whoever your favorite corner is in press coverage, having him have the game of his life, because he's going to need to.
Yeah, this is a Trent McDuffie game. This is a game, because just the box score numbers from the last two games, that are the two games last year the Chiefs played against the Bengals, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase combined for 26 receptions for 485 yards and 4 touchdowns. I believe. I mean, Jamar Chase in the one game had 266 yards and 3 touchdowns in the regular season. He looked like the greatest receiver to ever live. This is going to, and he might end up being that. He is an absolute stud, but this is, to your point, and I talked with Craig Stout about this, one of the hosts on our network, that, you know, and you know Craig, but you know, so many of the plays were outside the numbers, 50-50 balls. And this is set up for Josh Williams, one of the other young corners, bigger physical player, Trent McDuffie, to go and win those situations. To your point, it's going to be the biggest test that they have. Not that they haven't faced good receivers yet, but it hasn't been as obvious of there's going to be 4 or 5 shots in this game that are just 50-50 balls down the sideline. And that's why these guys are brought in here. Staying on the Bengals side, because so much was made about some of the moves they made over the offseason to try to shore up their offensive line. What have you seen from that group this year? And can Chris Jones, Frank Clark's showed some burst so far this year, especially the last couple of weeks. He's really shown some get off. Carlos Dunlap's made plays. George Karloftis is getting back into it, bringing down the quarterback and affecting plays. What can the Chiefs defensive line and front do against the Bengals offensive line, which had been at least the narrative out there is that was kind of a weak thing. You could get after him. You could hit Burrow with all the sacks and everything he was taking.
It was definitely worse early in the year. And I saw this team live in Dallas week 2, week 3, whatever that was. I went out there and saw Burrow against Micah and that whole front and everything like that. And while I won't say that, you know, Chris Jones can't win one-on-ones against this line, he absolutely can, because he's Chris Jones. I even think that Karloftis, you know, especially working on I can't remember the name of their left tackle, but he's terrible against speed to power. Like, that's Karloftis all day. Like, they can win those one-on-ones. The problem that since he was having early in the year, and especially in that game, was their communication was horrible. Like, in terms of how they picked up stunts, in terms of how they picked up blitzes, like, they were just straight up bad. And they've gotten better throughout the year at that communication, you know, staying level with each other against stunts, being able to identify blitzes pre-snap and get their, you know, being able to point the mic correctly and slide the right direction. They've gotten a lot better at that. And so I think that if you are going to get pressure, it's less about the stunts and the blitzes and more about lining up the front and not playing any games and basically doing whatever you can to get the center to go away from Chris Jones and give him one-on-ones, because he can still win them. I think if you're trying to rely on stunts and games and blitzes to just like scheme up pressure, that's not going to be as effective now as it was early in the year. You got to be able to just like put 5 or 6 dudes on the line, give Chris the one-on-one and trust him to go do it, which I think he can.
What are ways that formationally at a very basic level that fans who are watching can pay attention to in ways to do what you're saying of getting the center to go away from Chris? How can the Chiefs set up formations and how can they put together their defensive front to get him in those situations?
I think that it doesn't even mean that you need to blitz. Like, it doesn't mean that you need to line up, you know, a linebacker in the A gap and like force the center to stay there.
Right.
because we're not trying to get the center to like pop his eyes up, throw a hand, and then go to Chris. Like, mm-hmm. we want him to stay over there. And so I think it's about, you know, lining up and looking like you're going to bring 3 week or 4 week or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. having the nickel kind of creep down a little bit and not play a whole lot of man coverage, because you can't play man coverage while also having the nickel pretend like he's going to blitz, like unless you have the best nickel of all time. It's right. more so getting creative with how you call all these different zone coverages to make it look like you're willing to bring it from that mm-hmm. side. Because if you look like the nickel's coming, or if you look like you're bringing 4 week or something like that, the center's going to go and they're going to leave yeah. Chris one-on-one. It doesn't mean you need to bring it. You just got to look like you're bringing it and maybe do it a couple times early. Even if it doesn't work, just like put that thought in their head of like, they could bring four here. We got to slide. And then you can let that pay dividends in the second and third quarter when they start sliding into nothing. And then Chris and George get one-on-ones.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, that's an easy thing for anyone to kind of watch for in those plays. And if you see Chris Jones go get a sack when they show the replay, to the point that you're making, see what was doing, see where the center went and see why he may have gone there. These are the types of things that I love listening to and hearing your perspective on, because it gives me an opportunity when watching the game to go back and remember a lot of these things. And Jonah Williams is the left tackle for the Bengals right now, that I think you were looking for his name.
Yeah. He doesn't have great core strength. So that's what I would attack.
All right. Anything else for the Chiefs defense or Bengals offense that stands out as a storyline? Or we talked about obviously the guys on the outside containing those two dudes in the front, but anything else that stands out that you think could be a difference in this game?
These running backs catch passes really well, and they break tackles in space really well. So off the top of my head, I can't remember which of the Chiefs linebackers they like to, in terms of man coverage situations, which of the Chiefs linebackers they like to isolate in man coverage, or if they just kind of do a like an east west bracket in whichever direction the release is, they do that. I can't remember how they like to do it, but these linebackers in general, when the running backs are catching passes in space, they have to be able to make these tackles. Like you saw in the first play of the game last week, Cincinnati, Samaje Perine catches a ball in the flat and like stiff arms of Titans DB into Narnia. Like it was, and they do that every week. So whoever's out there, safeties and linebackers, like they, I think Willie Gay, is he back?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Willie Gay's been back, and yeah, they've rotated Darius Harris in at different points, but it's Bolton, it's Willie Gay. Those are the main dudes that are out there all the time. And so yeah. Willie Gay would be the generally thought to be the one who was more of the guy's going to make plays in pass coverage, although Nick Bolton has two interceptions over the last 2 weeks. One of them was on a deflected pass, but he's been much better in pass coverage and his ability in space than he was or when people thought coming out. So
I actually really like Bolton a lot. When I was at the Chiefs Chargers game a couple weeks ago, like he was making plays all over the damn place. I love Nick Bolton a lot. But I just couldn't remember because I saw Willie Gay went down. I couldn't remember if he was out or if he was back. But
yeah, he's back. He had the 4-game suspension as well, and he's been banged up at different points. But he's in there now, and yeah, you're going to need all these dudes because Joe Mixon comes back. He's one of the more underrated players. Doesn't really get spoken of in that same, at least I don't hear it, in the same kind of vein as some of the other top running backs in the league. But when he's healthy, he's an absolute dude. All right, let's switch to the other side of the ball and talk about the Bengals defense going up against Mahomes in this offense. What do the Bengals like to do defensively before we get into the chess match we may see? What do the Bengals like to do defensively, and what stands out about that group to you?
So they're a fascinating defense because they don't necessarily lean into anything specifically. Like they're either average or below average, quote unquote, in terms of percentage of every single coverage, like cover three. You know, they don't do a whole lot of quarter half. They don't do a whole lot of cover five. The only thing that I would say that they are above average in is cover two and cover one. And it depends on the down and distance, everything like that. But they're very much like, we will play cover two on early downs and force you to run into it, because they are willing to get into third and three rather than giving up a chunk play. And so they are more than willing to play cover two on early downs, bait you into getting, you know, a 3-yard carry and a 4-yard carry, because DJ Reader's a monster now that he's back. And then they'll man up on third and three and say, okay, go beat us. And if you get a 5-yard stick or something like that, a man breaker, we'll line up and we'll do it again. And they will mix in cover three. They will mix in quarters. They'll mix in quarter half, but not as much. It's generally a nothing cheap, nothing deep defense. And then they line up and they test you with man coverage when it really matters. And so in terms of, you know, how the Chiefs will attack this team, there's a concept that they really, really like against cover two. And you saw, you remember the big catch that MVS got against Tampa, where he was running down the middle seam against Devin White, caught that big ball over the middle.
Yep.
That is essentially their modern equivalent of Y-cross. And I'm breaking this down on a film room this week. They have a lot of chunk plays this year that have come on this concept where they'll do a high-low to the boundary side with some kind of route to the flat, whether it's a return or a flat route or something like that. They'll get some threat in the flat, and then they'll get Travis or mostly Travis running like a corner route. It's essentially smash. They'll do a high load to that side because they want to force a 3-over-2, whether it's quarters, whether it's cover two. They want three guys to be focused on that high low so that it can be contained. And they love this against middle field open coverages. So safety here, middle field open, cover two. That's what the Bengals happen to do quite a bit. And then there's going to be a read route from the slot on the other side. And so if there's a middle field safety in the post, it'll convert to a cross. If the middle field's wide open, they'll just keep running up the seam. And that's why they like to have MVS do it, because he's really fast. And typically against cover two, you're going to get a linebacker matched up the seam, especially when the safety gets pulled towards the boundary by that smash concept. And so I think that we're going to see that this week because the Chiefs love it. And it happens to be their best cover two breaker in terms of getting chunk plays against that coverage. So I would imagine we're going to get a big ball to MVS, and then we're going to stop seeing cover two. Then we're going to see more cover three. We're going to see, I think, a little bit more quarters, because quarters is a little bit better at protecting that post area. We're going to see a little bit more quarter half, but then we're also going to see a lot more man coverage because they want to protect the post. And once we get into the man coverage, which this season I think has been a storyline in terms of how much teams play man.
That's my next question for you. Is just that we've seen him drop eight and do all those things that was not unique last year. We saw it all the time. It'd be a storyline. All you have to do is drop a bunch of dudes, stop sending extra guys at Mahomes because they'll find the open guy, drop eight in coverage and make them methodically move the ball down the field, make sure the receivers are in their windows where they're supposed to be, consistently to go down the field, and they couldn't consistently do that. And so that was the next question, is do you expect the Bengals to do what they did last year, knowing that's a completely, I don't say a completely new offense, but they're getting it done in completely new ways this year. What do you expect that chess match kind of to look like?
I don't think they're going to do a whole lot of drop eight because it's a different Chiefs team. It's a very different Chiefs team. And I think that, you know, looking at how this team operates against zone, they really like playing against zone coverage this year. They're a lot better at it this year. And I don't know if it's just because it's a different mix of receivers on the field that are really good at reading zones and settling where Pat wants them to settle, you know, whether it's drop eight or whether it's, you know, normally dropping seven, you're doing a three high or two high or whatever. They've been very good at both manipulating zone coverages and also getting defenses into the point where a zone coverage can become a man coverage at some point. Like if you're playing too deep and you got two guys running deep, guess what? Safety's going to have to cover one of them. And at that point, ball's in the air. It just basically becomes man coverage. And so they've done a really good job of, okay, you're in zone. The only thing that matters here are how many are those zones deep so that we know how many guys to send deep. Because once we match numbers for numbers, 20 plus yards down the field, then everything is just man and we can go win. And so I think they've been very good at that as well, which has made teams a little bit more reticent to play zone against them. It's not just that they're playing man because they don't believe in any of the receivers other than Travis Kelce. They're a little bit forced into playing man because a lot of teams don't trust their safeties one-on-one against MVS. And they don't trust, you know, I would say even Juju has had moments where like, oh man, I don't know if we want to force a one-on-one tackle situation in space here because he's really good at breaking tackles. So I think teams have started to play a little bit more man to make sure that they get the right guys matched up on the right Chiefs weapons so that they don't get all these crazy matchup disadvantages that we see the Chiefs generate at will against zone.
What are some of the matchup, like more specifically, as we talk about, again, we're talking with Brett Coleman of YouTube legend status and also from Bootleg Football. But Brett, when they're good at this game, what are the key matchups for that side of the ball as far as the Bengals defense? Looking from their perspective, who has to play well, who has to do certain things to even try to slow down the Chiefs offense or slow down their ability to put up 30, 35 points, whatever many points you think it's going to take to win this football game. Last two, we talked about Bengals beat them twice last year. Both those games are by 3 points. And so it wasn't like they were getting blown out. But when you're looking at it from the Bengals defensive perspective, what's the key for them? And then same thing on the Chiefs offense. What do you expect to see specifically from the guys and who could step out based on the way that, you know, they like to play their defense?
Interestingly enough, the key aspect that I'm looking for from a schematic perspective in this game actually doesn't really have a whole lot to do with Mahomes in the pass game. It actually has to do with the run game. And the Chiefs don't run the ball a whole lot. Everybody knows that. They're bottom five in run pass differential. It's like we're lucky to see a third of their plays be a run on any given week, right?
Yeah.
If you look at how the Bengals defense played against Tennessee last week, which you would think wouldn't be a great comparison to KC, but it actually is because Tennessee shares a personnel affinity for 12 and 13 personnel. They're both top five in terms of having multiple tight ends on the field. And the Bengals played a lot of nickel into that. They like playing nickel into 12 and 13 personnel. And again, they like playing cover two from nickel into 12 and 13 personnel, specifically because they have DJ Reader, because they know that even if you got more big bodies on the field, they have a nose tackle, or really just a DT in general at this point. He plays everything, but they have a guy who is so ridiculously dominant that he can account for both A gaps at the same time. And I'm not talking about lining up as a true zero and two gapping. I'm talking about lining up as a two eye or a cock nose. And if you're trying to run zone against their nickel defense from 12 and 13 personnel, he's going to take away both of those A gaps because he's going to dump on whatever guard you've got there. And he's going to do that so consistently that all of a sudden the center is going to have to stick longer so the linebackers can fly downfield. Like, he changes the math in the run game, which allows them to play a 4-2-5 into 12 and 13 personnel, which most teams can't do without getting run on, that is. And like, you look at, I think it was 11 of the Titans running back carries last week came against a 4-2-5 nickel from 12 and 13 personnel. And it was like power, no yards, counter, averaging half a yard, outside zone, averaging 2 yards, inside zone, averaging minus 1 yard. Like, they couldn't run the ball. And so I think that if the Chiefs have any desire to get something out of their run game this week, they're going to have to do something else schematically to attack this team's nickel defense from 12 and 13. And in particular, they're going to have to find a way to take DJ Reader out of the game. I don't know if they can, because DJ Reader is amazing, but they're going to have to try to find a way. The only thing that Cincinnati really gives up with any sort of regularity is counter. They did it against, they got gashed on counter against Dallas. They got gashed on counter against Baltimore. Kansas City happens to really like running counter, but again, that's only like 3 plays in the game. So unless Isaiah can like just break a 30 yarder off counter to get a chunk, I just don't think the run game is going to be a factor at all, which then puts that much more pressure on Mahomes and Travis and MBS and Juju to do everything. And it's tough. It's a really tough defense schematically for KC to handle.
I spent a lot of time over the last, you know, decade that Andy Reid had been with the Chiefs going into certain games with certain matchups being seen. You know what? This is really setting up for the running game to really get going. And it just never works out the way that you think. And I just, because you had mentioned that, I looked it up, and over the last 2 games last year, Chiefs had 155 yards rushing in one loss against the Bengals, 139 in the other. They were averaging over 6 yards per carry. This was Jerick McKinnon in the playoff game, in the regular season game, in the playoff game. No, I had 12 carries for 65 yards at 5.4 yards per carry. And then the regular season game, it was Darrell Williams, had 14 carries for 88 yards, averaging 6.3. I mean, they were averaging over 6 yards a carry in the 2 games against the Bengals last year. Does that mean they're going to run the ball a lot relative to what they do? Maybe, which means maybe 37%, 38% run share for the offense. But yeah, I think it's going to be Patrick Mahomes throwing the football. But to your point, that is interesting to say about counter and DJ Reader, another thing for fans to watch when they're watching the game to kind of understand from the chess match point of view what's going on. Anything else on that side of the ball with those two groups that really stands out to you that you're looking forward to watching?
You know, kind of going over the Bengals depth chart, it's interesting because other than some of the guys up front, it's very much like a, you know, we have a defense that doesn't have any like superstars on it, but there's no real weaknesses either. Like Jesse Bates is obviously a great safety. Von Bell's been doing it for a long time. Mike Hilton is about as scrappy and physical a nickel as you're ever going to see, which is part of the reason why they play the run so well from nickel, is because he's a hitter.
First thing I thought about when you said they like to play nickel against 12 and 13 personnel, I'm like, that's not a big nickel. Mike Hilton is not a big player, but to your point, he's physical. I loved him when he was in Pittsburgh. I thought he was a very underrated player running around doing what he did. But yeah, I was a big fan of Jermaine Pratt coming out of the draft that year. So I don't know how he's playing overall, but looking at the defense, yeah, I don't see a ton of superstars. Logan Wilson, Trey Hendrickson has played like a superstar in 2 games against the Chiefs. He's played really well, but yeah, let's move on to a prediction. Your expectations. What are you predicting happens in this game between the Chiefs and Bengals on Sunday?
Lower scoring than people think. And I know the Chiefs are averaging like 30 points a game. This has been arguably the best Chiefs offensive season in terms of points output since Mahomes is taken over. You know, I don't know if they've season long held a 30 point average the entire, I think they've hit 29 a couple times. I don't think they've hit 30.
2018, they flirted with it because they were flirting with the Denver Broncos record the year that he won the MVP, but that was his first year starting. That was ages ago.
People didn't know what they were even looking at yet, you know? But since then, I think it's always been like 27 to 29, and they were going into this last week. I don't know what it is now, but they were sitting at a little over 30. And so this is a amazing Chiefs offense, arguably the best we've seen since 2018, if not better, all things considered. And that being said, defensively, the Bengals match up not bad with them. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see it be like 21-17, 21-17. 20, like even like that would be a nail biter, which as a neutral fan, I would love. I would be surprised given the matchups that both teams have here schematically and personnel wise. I would be surprised a little bit if this was a barn burner. I think this is going to be a very well balanced game with plays on both sides, offensively and defensively. I think both teams are going to struggle to run the ball a little bit, and it's going to be like straight up, who's making the play in the fourth quarter, Burrow or Mahomes? Because it's not going to be a high flying affair, and it literally is going to come down to, you're going to get maybe one or two possessions each in the fourth quarter. Can you make it happen? And both of these quarterbacks, as you know, can make it happen in clutch time. So I don't expect a barn burner. I would say like, let's go 21-20 Chiefs solely because Mahomes gets the ball last. And I believe in that.
Brett, I always enjoy talking to you, but I don't enjoy that answer at all. Because what you're telling me, no, it doesn't matter if they win. What you're telling me is it's going to be very similar like the Titans games against Mike Vrabel.
You're going to hate it.
So what you're saying is it's not going to be an enjoyable game to watch for, and I'm looping myself in, I'm not calling any Chiefs fans out, but us spoiled Chiefs fans that are just used to Mahomes throwing for 320 yards and then being like, I don't know if he really did anything in this game. Threw for 320 yards in that game last week, and you're just like, I don't know. I mean, throws another 320 yards, be the first quarterback in NFL history to have seven straight games of 320 yards. This is just the expectation now. And when you tell me, yeah, it's going to be this well-balanced game, they're going to score 21 points. You're telling me that the Chiefs only scored 21 points? I'm going to tell you that was a miserable experience for Chiefs fans relative to what we're expecting because of the bar they've set for themselves. And it's not fair to the Chiefs. They win the game, they move on. That's all they're trying to do. But from a fan perspective and this high-flying, all these highlights and all this stuff, you tell me we win 21-20, I'm going to tell you that was a miserable experience, Brett.
See, it's funny because Chiefs fans were like, oh my God, the Rams game was so stressful. I hated watching that game. They still covered 14.5.
There was zero stress in that. I don't know. I disagree with those Chiefs fans. I had zero stress in that game. And I had put out on social media, like, well, they covered. And like, there's 3 minutes left. They haven't covered yet. And I just screenshotted like Bryce Perkins at like 60 yards passing. It was like, he may end up being a decent player, but not worried about this at all. It would be a little different story with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, because it takes one-on-one situation with a deep ball for him to moss it over one of our defensive backs and then run down and score. They could score quickly. They can make big plays. And so, yes, it's going to make it even more miserable. It's going to be stressful if this is, like you said, I would rather have the 35-31 if we're going to lose, because at least then you feel like all we need is the ball last.
Yeah,
Mahomes needs 14 seconds to go down and get a touchdown. If they are losing, just give us the ball at the end. But 21 points, Brett.
That's the thing is, I think there's gonna be a lot of yards. Red zone. I think both teams stall out in the red zone here a lot.
Just because both teams
got good defenses.
That'd be 2 weeks in a row. I if there's one area I think the Chiefs at least are focusing on, that was the one area out of the Rams game that should have been better. I think they're averaging just under, I think they were right at 30 points a game going into that game last week. And then they scored 26, but they went 1 of 6 inside the red zone, which is very uncharacteristic for them. You have to give Rams credit. I mean, they're obviously, they've got a solid defense and they were very good inside the red zone, but that part was tough to watch. All right. Anything else, Chiefs fans, predictions, anything else that you're expecting based on schematically what these two teams like to do besides the Chiefs only scoring 21 points?
I still predict them.
You ruined my day. I take your word as like almost gold at this point. It's like, damn it, Brett.
You know, in terms of other matchups, I haven't looked at the injury reports for this game at all.
They'll all be back. On the Bengals side, everybody will be back. I don't know. Kadarius Toney's day to day, and so coach isn't going to say anything before Friday if he doesn't have to. They're going to take it slow with him, he said, just because it's soft tissue stuff for his players whose bodies move the way that those guys do. You want to be really careful with them just because of the way that they're literally wired to not re-aggravate those kinds of injuries. But I expect him to be back. We'll see about Thornhill for the Chiefs defense. Same thing with Joe Tooney. And then obviously Mecole Hardman, Clyde still out with being on IR for another couple weeks. So,
yeah. I would say if Tony is in, perhaps he gets a little involved in the run game. I would like to see that. I think he gives a little bit of a different dimension in the backfield than Pacheco would. Like, Pacheco runs hard. He's super physical, everything like that. But I would like to see them put Tony in the backfield a little bit and A, give him a couple carries to put that on film, and then throw to him out of the backfield a little bit to put that on film. Yeah. I would very much like to see that. Whether he's on the field, I have no idea. Because if there's one thing we know about Kadarius Toney, it's that his hamstrings are fickle, to say the least. I have one question for you before we leave.
Yes.
How do you feel about the Chargers getting 7 primetime games this year?
That's fine. That's fine. I, as a fan, like going to the games, love primetime. As a content creator with a post-game show and young kids who get up at 6:30 in the morning regardless, like, I'm okay with it. Go ahead and give the Chargers that primetime game. I think it's more fun just to dunk on the Broncos. Like, how bad do the Broncos must be that they put Patrick Mahomes out of primetime?
Dude, Christmas Day, we're getting Broncos-Rams. Oh. It's going to be miserable. Mm. Like, you're going to be forced to talk to your family all day. I don't know if I want to watch that at all. And I love football. I don't know if I, for my own mental health, I don't know if I can watch that game. Horrible. My father-in-law is a Rams fan, so it's going to be on, and I'm going to be just averting my eyes the entire time, not trying to watch that faster.
There's a worry amongst people within Kansas City. I don't know if they can still flex it at this point. I think there's still time. I think it's always like 3 weeks in advance. But the Christmas Eve day game between the Chiefs and Seahawks, there were rumblings that Chiefs-Seahawks game could get flexed to be a primetime game on Christmas Eve, which...
I wouldn't hate that.
I would. I've got young kids that I don't want a 7 o'clock game on Christmas Eve when we got a post game show and we got to be set up at Kingdom Bar and all that. Like, play the game at noon.
Oh, that's true.
Let's go hang out.
For your purposes, that's horrible.
Yeah, selfishly, no. if I was sitting at home and not doing anything, watching the game, like, yeah, that would be awesome for the same reason you just like all the stuff you talk about. I like to sit and watch football on Christmas Eve when everybody's home, nobody's working, nobody expects you to work, everybody leaves you alone for the most part. Like, sit and watch football, absolutely. But flexing that Chiefs Broncos game, didn't hurt anything. And like I said, it's just kind of fun to be like, wow, they really did really screwed everything up giving the Broncos that many primetime games. They really whiffed on that one.
Who do Chiefs fans hate the most in the division? I'm curious what like the classic hatred is.
Probably depends on the generation that you ask. I mean, for me, it's always going to be the Raiders. Just because I grew up as a, you know, in the Marty Schottenheimer era, and that was the team.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's for younger fans, it's probably the Chargers just because everybody gets so annoyed that they're picked to win the division like 9 years in a row and the Chiefs win it every single year, and it happened again this year, and it's becoming just a thing within Kansas City. It's like, can't wait for the national media to choose the Chargers to win the division because they all do it all the time. You probably did.
Did you pick the Chargers this year?
You picked the Bills to win the conference. But
oh, that's not that. I mean, come on.
No, that's fine. It's the Chargers winning the division one that's really annoying.
I think it was Kent's tweet where it's like the AFC West spent like $1 billion and the Chiefs still have this thing wrapped up by Thanksgiving. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I picked them to win the division, because nothing matters at this point. Not, as long as Andy and Pat are alive and have residencies in Missouri, they're going to win the division. That just is what it is.
The numbers are insane when you really break down what Andy Reid has done against the AFC West division since arriving a decade ago. And it was even before Patrick Mahomes. Like, when Alex Smith was a quarterback, they were dominating the AFC West. I think they won the first 2 in a row with Alex Smith and started doing really well. It was the first year, Broncos Peyton. In 2013. Yeah, 2013 was the Broncos. And then has it been since maybe 2014 Broncos?
When the Broncos won the Super Bowl in 2015, I can't remember who won the division that year, but at 2016 on, it's been ridiculously one-sided.
Yeah. Looking up right now, just to make sure we give everybody. Okay. Yeah. So 13, 14, 15 Broncos and the Chiefs have won it the last 6. So since 2016,
the Broncos went 41 years without back-to-back losing seasons, and they've had 6 straight. It's unbelievable. I mean, hilarious for you guys, but unbelievable to everybody else.
It's always fun. All right, Brett, let everybody know what you're working on. I know we talked before we were recording that you're working on a Chiefs video, Chiefs breakdown. Let people know what you're working on and where they can find it.
Yeah, I was at the Chiefs Chargers Sunday night game. two weeks ago at this point, and got to witness a Mahomes fourth quarter comeback with my own eyes. So check that off the bucket list. And, you know, I went into that game expecting something crazy to happen with those two quarterbacks, and that's what I got. And so it made making this episode super easy because I just get to gush about Patrick Mahomes for 20 minutes, and I'm really excited to do that. So it's coming out Saturday over on the channel, talking about different, you know, personnel tendencies, play calling tendencies for this Chiefs offense, and also how Mahomes himself has fixed the one problem he had, which was running himself into sacks. He doesn't do that anymore, and magically the Chiefs offense got even better. So we're going to go over that too, and his improved pocket presence. And then hopefully I don't jinx the shit out of them going into the Bengals game.
All right. Everybody, you can find him on social media at Brett Coleman. You can find his YouTube channel at Brett Coleman, and also at Bootleg Football with all phenomenal content covering the entire NFL. Brett, we appreciate it, man. We appreciate everybody out there for listening, spending part of your day with us here at KC Sports Network. This has been KCSN Update. We'll have more great content for you throughout the week. We'll have Matt Hamilton and Matt Castle later today on The Breakdown, doing some film study on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, along with plenty of other shows. About a dozen shows will come out before the Chiefs and the Bengals meet Sunday afternoon. We appreciate all of you. Hope you all have a great Wednesday, and we'll see y'all later.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.